This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane! Wow! Touchdown! What an athlete!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. This is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, Scorebook Live's Director of Recruiting, and the expert players, coaches, and fans follow.
Ooh-wee.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Spring games, a thing of the past? Texas, USC? Nebraska, others, canceling their spring game, worried about tampering and other things. How legit is that? Should programs be doing that? We will get into USC, not only potentially flipping Oregon's star quarterback commitment, but also just the state of things at USC. I think Lincoln Riley gave a really interesting interview with On3, kind of took a victory lap on last season.
Which is weird. I haven't seen this. I'm excited to talk about it because why would you be doing that?
As like an I told you so, our defense figured it out.
What?
They had a losing record in the Big Ten. Their whole thing is very, very strange. I'm going to give you a peek behind the curtain with USC because I actually had a not-so-friendly exchange with some folks at USC during the recruiting cycle, this cycle, about some of the things that were going on. And it was just strange. It's just weird the way they handle business and conduct business right now. There's some stuff going on that's a little bit weird. I think they can turn the corner. They have all the resources in the world. And God, when they hired Lincoln Riley, you heard me on the show say that's a huge problem for Oregon. It hasn't been. They need to get out of their own way. And that starts with not taking victory laps on your 4-5 Big Ten season. But I want to start with programs canceling their spring games. We're starting to see this. The latest programs to do so, it was in headlines today, Texas and USC. And part of the reason that they're citing canceling these games is tampering. They're worried about not only kind of their own program seeing a definitive roster. And if you do think in the transfer portal that that stuff is as clear as it used to be, you're fooling yourself. There's a whole lot. You know, the Oregon Ducks roster sometimes has three guys listed as ORs for the starting left guard to start the season.
Yeah.
I imagine almost every position in the country looks like that across the board for these top programs. They do not want to tell their sophomore swing tackle that's got plenty of promise, hey, you probably aren't the starter this year, but you're at Alabama, so you're potentially a second-round pick by the time it's all done. But yeah, you're not a starter this year. I guarantee you there's a very bold OR between the two left guards' names on the Alabama depth chart, and schools are canceling their spring games. And the reason's kind of obvious. I think it makes sense in this regard. If you make the college football playoff, you've played 16 games. You do not need to get in game shape and take game hits 3-4 months after playing 16 games and 6 months before you're going to play more tackle football.
Yeah.
Let your body recover.
Well,
and I know spring practices, there's some wear and tear, but if you're actually trying to showcase yourself to potentially enter the portal or even just win a starting job within your normal program, it is hard to be in full pads in front of 40, 50, 60,000 people and play 80%. You're going to play. And because of that, you're taking unnecessary wear and tear on your body.
Yeah, I did hear Steve Sarkisian. He spoke to this specifically. And he said, our program's played 30 games in the last 2 years,
yeah,
which is way different than what we've done before, where you maybe get to, you definitely play 12, you maybe get to 13. And like, you know, we're getting the work, we're getting the reps. These are kids that need to grow, they need to heal, they need to be in the weight room. Like, it's not that we're not doing things, but like, the spring game doesn't serve the same purpose that it used to.
Well, and I talked to Suk a little bit about this before my show, and you know, he played at BYU, and was like, how much would this have impacted you? And he's like, dude, my true sophomore year, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, there was a senior above me. We were close to competing, you know, for the starting job. And if I'd have had a great spring game and he had a dud spring game and I left the spring game and they went, well, the senior's the starter because he's the senior and you guys are close, I'd have potentially transferred to a different program in the modern era if another school came calling and said, you're our starting left guard. We need one. We saw you in the spring game. You look good. And I think programs are trying to avoid that. Where I think we have a little bit of an issue here is some of the programs that need to be doing it aren't. And some of the programs that should be fine, in other words, their NIL and collectives are doing quite well, are canceling their spring games. Texas has plenty of money, and I know there's a lot of competition for their starting jobs, so I get that, and I get the wear and tear on the body. But if any part of them canceling is worrying about tampering, it's a little silly. If I'm Oregon State, if I'm Fresno State, if I'm Washington State, I'm not having a spring game. And I definitely don't want that thing televised. And I know people can get it anyway. But if you have access to a spring game and your third, fourth receiver pops and you're watching that and you're Stanford or Cal or whoever, and you're like, we could really use the receiver. Let's start looking at some of these spring games and seeing if any of these guys are unhappy. And how this works, because I've been a part of this. I had a program in the Big Ten a few years ago reach out and ask me about a kid that was in college who played high school football in Oregon. And he had played, and I'd written about him pretty extensively during his high school career. And they reached out and said, could you ask this kid if he might leave for X amount of dollars? I knew he was pretty happy where he was, but I did relay the message. I was asked about it. I relayed it, and the kid was fine where he was and stayed. So that's how that works. And people say, well, it's tampering. It is, in a way, but by rule, it's not. You could float as a school that you're interested in a kid, and you could, air quotes here, kind of let slip. Like, here's how much wiggle room we have in our budget. We could use a receiver. You happen to know Davy Jones. Could you ask him if he's got room in his locker for $100,000? And that's kind of the way this is working. And so tampering is not as direct as people think, and people will say, we know for a fact that Alabama tampered with our team. No, you don't. You don't know that for a fact, because it's not how it works. They're smarter than that. And by the way, this has been going on for a long time. The idea that this stuff is new, the idea that players getting paid is new, is all kind of silly. Years ago, before it was legal to pay players, there was a standard. This was a standard rate for 5 stars to take an official visit to your school. It was 10 grand. You wanted a 5-star recruit to take an official visit to your school, and you were a real player, and that 5-star was a legit guy that had, you know, Alabama, Georgia, USC, Oregon, Michigan, Ohio State offers. You want him to visit your school? 10 grand. You might be able to get away with 5 grand. And some of the really, really, really transcendent talents, maybe it's up to 20 grand. But the going rate was 10 grand. That was a known thing. That was a known thing among reporters. We all knew that. And the fact that that never got discussed, and I'm saying nationwide, like that's a thing. It was a thing in the SEC. That's where it started, the SEC and the ACC. But it was a thing. And everybody knew it. It didn't get written about, but we all knew. Oh, wow, he's taking a surprise visit to X school all of a sudden. I wonder where that's coming from. And you'd sometimes find out behind the scenes, oh, no, he's locked in with the school he's committed to. He could use the extra 10 grand. So he's taking the surprise visit, and the school has a little bit of extra money in the budget. They're willing to throw 10 grand at him to see if they can't shock the world and flip him. But he's not really interested. He's pretty solid. That happened all the time. And throughout history, we talk about now like tampering, and the NCAA needs to crack down on this, and the NCAA needs to kind of help facilitate this NIL stuff in a better way. They need to manage it better. That's not going to happen. The NCAA has been nothing but buffoonery for 20 to 25 years. You know, in the history of this show, which is like 8 years now, there have probably been 4 or 5 major scandals. All of which, every single one, I did a segment about before it was news that the NCAA found out about. Point being, it was so loud and it was so commonly discussed, the NCAA had no choice but to be like, we should probably look into this. I did a whole segment on Arizona State cheating during COVID. A whole segment on it. I listed things they were doing cheating. And the way you knew is they weren't supposed to host recruits. And recruits would say, playing Top Golf with the Arizona State coaches. And they posted it on social media.
They went. It happened.
They had video playing at Top Golf with the coaching staff. More than once, kids would tweet out, headed to Arizona State. And you're like, you're not allowed to take visits right now. And it would stay up for a day and a half. And then the kid would take it down, but not before tweeting a picture at the airport in Phoenix. And you're like, guys, it was so obvious they were cheating. The basketball scandal that with Adidas and Nike and paying AAU programs and funneling money to kids. That's the loudest scandal. Everybody thinks football is the dirtiest. Basketball is so far away the dirtiest.
Basketball coaches and programs have been in court for like things that are actually against the law, not just like, oh, we let some recruits come over. Like, you can't do that according to recruiting rules, but like in society, you can do that. But there's bribes and things. I mean, there's all kinds of shadiness in college hoops.
I covered the Nike Hoop Summit years ago, and they're smarter about it now. The athletes are smarter about it now. I was on the record doing recruiting updates for the Oregonian, and the kid I was interviewing said, I'm an Adidas athlete, so my top three are all Adidas schools. That was totally against the rules.
Right.
And it was completely on the record. And he wasn't the only one. Interviewed another kid. I'm a Nike guy.
And all it means is that, no, we can't sign for these now, but we've already made backdoor deals with these companies and their representatives. And
more
so
than
therefore,
that.
Yeah.
My older sister works for Nike now. And that's an example.
Yep, yep.
But there was a story about somebody worked for LeBron, right? Who was the athlete that their sister was hired by LeBron's company, and then he signed with that agency when he graduated? And she worked there and made like six figures as a 22-year-old with no experience. That stuff was going on all the time. Basketball was so corrupt. And then the NCAA is like, we should probably do something about this. I mentioned Arizona State. I did a segment early when we were talking about NIL, and I said, and because I got into it with another national reporter on social media, that I had heard about an 8-figure deal for a quarterback. And he was like, that doesn't exist. You're an idiot. There is no deal, 8-figure deal out there. They're exaggerated. And he said, by 10 times. That the deals he hears about are always exaggerated by media people by 10 times. And I said, no, there's an 8-figure deal out for a quarterback. It's a multi-year deal. And we argued back and forth. And then like 2 weeks later, the deal with Jaden Rashada came out that it was what? I forget now, but it was like $14 million or $12 million.
Yeah, it was absurd.
It was an 8-figure deal. When the NCAA gets involved, it's because this stuff is so insanely loud. The other big controversy, the first year of NIL, I mentioned, Texas A&M reportedly has $30 million to work with in their recruiting class. I heard that from everywhere. I heard it from recruits. I heard it from 7-on-7 coaches. I heard it from other college coaches. Texas A&M is full-on advertising. We are paying $30 million for our recruiting class. At the time that I talked about that on the air, their class was outside the top 50 nationally for that cycle. And I said, hey, I don't know what's going to happen with it. I'm just telling you this is extremely loud to the point I'm comfortable talking about it on the air. Guess where they finished? Not only number one that year, they finished with the highest rated class in the history of recruiting rankings to that point. When I came on the air, they were out and talked about it. They were outside the top 50. We were in the middle of COVID when I talked about Arizona State blatantly cheating. I did a segment on here about how insane it is that athletes who are not allowed to sign deals openly in interviews at the Hoop Summit were saying what brand they're sponsored by when they were juniors in high school. Those are times when the NCAA acted. They only act when it's done and obvious and signed and sealed and delivered. Cam Newton's dad's church gets upgraded by $100,000 and there's a recording of him getting the money. Sorry, guys, no receipt. Not quite obvious enough for us. It has to be so obvious. So here we are, and schools are now canceling their spring games because they're so worried about tampering. And people are saying in response, God, the NCAA has to do something. Schools are canceling their spring game because they're so worried about their athletes getting exposure. And because of that exposure, another school coming in and taking their talent. I'll tell you this. It's not going to get fixed by the NCAA. We'll do a little college football problem solving next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Got some breaking NFL news that ties in locally. Elijah Molden, the pride of West Lynn High School, just signed a 3-year extension with the Chargers worth $18.25 million, $13.5 million in guarantees. Happened to have texted with the family today. They're quite happy. Things are going
good for him. Swimming. Local boy makes good.
Dude, he had a great year this year. Up until he got hurt, he had a phenomenal season. I know one got called back because of defensive holding on the other side of the field, but he had a stretch where he had 4 or 5 picks and a fumble recovery in just a 6 or 7 game stretch. Again, one got called back. He ends up with a career high 3 interceptions, 2 fumble recoveries, was a major impact player when he was healthy for the Chargers. First of all, hope he gets healthy because he did miss the end of the season, but also 13.5 in guarantees is a wonderful thing for the family. An awesome, awesome deal there. Talking about canceling spring games and the fact that programs at this point are really worried about tampering, that we don't even want to have, if we're a high-profile school, our spring game's on TV. If our backups, and by the way, there are backups because we're having a game, so there are listed starters. One, we'd like to keep that more under wraps than we used to. In other words, we don't really just keep the depth chart sitting on the on the front of the chalkboard anymore. It's more of a fluid thing, or at least you pretend it is, so you can keep the depth on your roster. You have a spring game, you kind of have to have one. And even if you have oars and you divide up the teams, guys aren't stupid, and they understand where they are in the pecking order. If you're the third guard or one of 3 guards and you have a great spring game and find out you may or may not be the starter, you may be willing to transfer if through the pipeline somebody reaches out and says, hey, LSU could use a starting right guard. How do you feel about $1.5 million? And that's double what you're getting anywhere else, and it's a starting job. And that's what programs are worried about. So how do you fix it? And I think one thing is it is a little bit we'll call it chicken salad, that it's Texas and USC who are canceling their spring games. Through the modern history now of the transfer portal and the NIL era, if we were talking about people who needed to cancel their spring games and hide their assets, Texas and USC traditionally have been the ones pulling talent, Jordan Addison, for example, rather than the ones who are having their rosters poached. If you're Oregon State and you see Texas and USC cancel their spring game, aren't you going like, really, guys? Like, how would you like to have our issues and then still try to have a spring game? What's going to end up happening? And people keep looking for the NCAA to fix this. And you keep seeing all these lawsuits and they're all hysterical because every time they get sued with some sort of restriction, the courts shoot it down. The reality is these athletes are in an open market system, and that's not going to change. The problem is there's a lot of predatory stuff going on. You have predatory agents trying to get high school kids to agree to work with them for way more than an industry standard, for 15%, for 20%, rather than like a 2.5% or 3% or even less that a normal agent would get. And people would argue, well, college deals are less. It doesn't matter. You're not an NFL agent. People are like, well, I'm not getting the same cut I would get as if I represented, Patrick Mahomes. Well, you're not representing Patrick Mahomes. You're representing a high school kid. So if the agent standard across sports is 3%, don't ask for 15. You're inflating your number because you're being stingy about it. That's got to change. So what needs to end up happening is you need to have the players agree to some sort of collective bargaining agreement that when athletes sign a scholarship, they sign a letter of intent that also binds them to a student-athletes union. The student-athletes union can then, conference by conference, agree to a salary cap. The salary cap each year will go to the overall roster and will also include your recruiting class. So you have $85 million to spend each year. That's an insane number. It's not that high. But you have your $85 million to spend each year or whatever, your $30 million to spend each year. And you can spread that out however you want. You want to pay a recruiting class 20 of your $30 million? Well, the $10 million on your current roster is going to be pissed, but you're going to have a great recruiting class. You want to spend 28 of your 30 on your current class and not spend too much on your current recruiting class or the portal, and I only have $2 million left? That's your prerogative. The money can't roll over. That's the way this needs to be done. The other thing that's going to happen when this eventually does happen, and it will eventually happen, you will have a structure for player representations via agents in this players union. In other words, you'll have players union approved agencies and agents. In other words, no more predatory agents. You have to get our seal of approval to represent a student athlete to be eligible in the NCAA so that these kids are not paying agents, street agents, 15 to 20%. They also will have a salary cap. And as part of that, you will have to disclose how much money these deals are worth. I had a director of player personnel from one of the top 10 programs in America. No, it wasn't Oregon. It was a Southern school. Tell me that he talked to one of the higher ups of the front office of the Kansas City Chiefs, and they were just their buddies, and they were just BSing. They weren't talking about prospects or anything. And he said, "Dude, your job is so much harder than mine." And he goes, "What? You run the Chiefs. It doesn't get much harder. You're heavily involved with the Chiefs in the front office. It doesn't get much harder than that in terms of expectation." And he said, "Yeah, but we know what every bid is on free agents. We know how much we can spend year to year."
I hadn't thought of that. There's so much more that's just out in the open on the table.
So at least we can manage it and say, okay, we have $7 million left after we pay Tooney and Mahomes and Rashi Rice and Chris Jones to go fix our left tackle spot. You have guys that basically are all under contract all over the country. You don't know who's going to enter into the transfer portal.
No, what you have is Major League Baseball, where there's no cap, and owners can spend as much or as little as they want, and their fans all want them to be competitive, but some are going to outspend and overspend, and others are going to be like, well, here's how we kind of want to do things.
But even in that, you have contracts that are structured where you know someone's about to hit free agency. The guy with the Chiefs said, in college football now, you don't know who the free agent pool is. So you don't know going into free agency, the transfer portal window, essentially, how much you should have even saved. Oh, crap. Seven of the best players in America entered the portal. We spent it all on our recruiting class. We had no idea these seven players were going to be there. Oh, yeah, and we have no idea what the bids are for those players. So, yeah, we got a visit with the number two left tackle in the country. He says Georgia offered him $5 million. Do we call his bluff and offer him 2.5 because that's all we have? Or do we match the potential phantom offer of $5 million? Here's the other piece. In the NFL, when you offer a free agent, I didn't know this, you have to file that with the league. So it's not necessarily for public consumption. The league just has to say, okay, this is an offer that we've seen. So there are no blind offers. So you know roughly what the market is. In college football, that doesn't exist. So if you create a players union, you ratify a list of agents that can represent those players, and going forward, you put a salary cap on teams, and players have to divulge how much they're getting paid, you start to turn it from a black market into an understood year in, year out salary cap that is somewhat more predictable. That's what has to happen. And there are very few players, very, very few, the Travis Hunters of the world, the Arch Mannings of the world, who would say, it does not behoove me to disclose how much I'm getting. My dad, my coach, is a former NFL superstar. I don't need help finding an agent. My name carries more weight than any type of salary cap structure you could have for college football. I break the mold. And that may exist, and those guys may sue, and they may win. But for 99.9% of college athletes, a players' union with player reps who can approve agents and can work with the NCAA to approve a salary cap and work with college programs to at least have some sort of structure to these free agent deals would go a long way in fixing tampering. It would go a long way in players not having predatory agents take way too much money from them. And it would go a long way in solidifying these rosters where coaches aren't going, I'm hiding my team in the spring game. Listen, we have this much cap space. We know USC's got $11 million in cap space coming in. So we better be a little bit careful because USC needs an O-line and they've got $11 million in cap space. How do we know that? We can look at their salary cap. We know how much their athletes are getting paid. That's what needs to be in place. It'll take time to get there. But if you want to play big business college football, you got to start handling things like big business. And one thing I will say that Oregon does a phenomenal job about, you do not hear about Oregon when it comes to being afraid that their players are going to get stolen. You do not hear situations of players coming out after transferring saying, I didn't get paid my money. You do not hear athletes coming out who are being recruited by Oregon saying, I got offered $7 million by Oregon and they chose Georgia anyway. They keep it tight. And my understanding, when we talk about how Phil Knight's involved, everyone likes to say he's the money man. I don't think so. When you're looking for Nike's influence in Oregon, look at the way they operate their business. They run it like a professional organization. In other words, the contracts are tight when they agree with an athlete. You don't have leaks. You don't have kids transferring saying, I didn't get my money. You don't have an athlete saying, Oregon had me represented by this guy and he took 40% of my money. It doesn't work like that. They keep things buttoned up. That's where I think Phil Knight and Nike's influence has impacted Oregon. Even more than money, they've taught them very quickly how to run a college football program like a professional organization. Pivoting from Oregon to a program that right now could really use someone teaching them how to run things like a professional organization. USC has behind the scenes had an abomination of the last 6 to 8 months. And I think they're going to figure it out in time, but I said that last year. So I want to delve into some things with USC, including two of the biggest overpays in all of college football last year coming from USC panic moves. We'll talk about it next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. Just talked about changes that need to happen to college football to kind of streamline things, and a players union, a student athletes union is obviously needed. I mentioned you don't hear that stuff coming out of Oregon because they run things at a really high level. They're good at what they do. They run like a professional organization, and that's not the case everywhere. You look at USC, they have all the resources in the world and they can't seem to get out of their own way. Wasn't that long ago with Clay Helton, they finished the early signing period with the 12th best class in the Pac-12. And I really feel like there are real cracks in the foundation of what USC is doing. I saw an interview with Lincoln Riley on Three, and the interviewer started out saying, like, did you keep receipts about people who said your defense hadn't figured it out? And how good does it feel to have that problem solved? And Lincoln Riley, you know, he didn't say like, we're at the top of the mountain, but it was like, yeah, we kept receipts and our defense figured it out. They had a losing record in the Big Ten. They went 7-6 last year. Now, compare that to Alabama. And you can say, well, God, Alabama had Nick Saban. Yeah, and USC had Pete Carroll. If we're talking about the two biggest dynasties of my adult life, the two biggest dynasties, and one obviously happened before the other, is Pete Carroll's USC team and Nick Saban's Alabama team. Those are the two biggest dynasties. You have USC going 7-6, and Lincoln Riley does an interview that says, we kept receipts. Alabama goes 9-4, and they hate Kalen DeBoer. They think he's a disaster. They need to make the college football playoff this year or else. The tone is different. What's allowed is different. What's accepted is different. And you look at what's gone on with USC and recruiting. And I guess I'm kind of a little ready to spill some tea. I know that's a lame way to say it, but like...
It's what the kids are saying.
It's what happened in this last cycle was insane. So, as I understand it, USC and Lincoln Riley have really been very Chip Kelly-ish in the way they present their recruiting approach, i.e., and I've heard this from kids, so I don't feel like I'm spilling anything too crazy, that Lincoln Riley's pitch in part is, I've been so successful everywhere I've been offensively that being in my offense nets you future money. That you'll win a Heisman if you're a quarterback. You'll have a chance to win a Biletnikoff. You will have a 1,000-yard season as a running back if you're in my offense. Look at what I did at Oklahoma. Look at what I've done for Caleb Williams at USC. And recruits now are going, yeah, that really matters. And it still works, by the way. However, if you lowball athletes, and by all accounts, and I heard this 5 different places, Julian Lewis was offered roughly $1.2 million at USC. 1.2.
Doesn't sound like a lot for the top quarterback.
Safe to say, part of the reason those visits were going on to Colorado...
Negotiations?
Were negotiations, at least initially. And my understanding was, through multiple conversations that included, hey, other schools are offering more than double. Can you come up a little bit? Was, no, we can't. And I think they called his bluff and called his bluff and called his bluff. And guess where he ended up? Colorado. Well, I knew he was flipping to Colorado. And a lot of people did. I'm not tooting my own horn here. So I did
writing was kind of on the wall there. Not publicly, but reporting-wise, right?
Yes. Separate from that, they beat their chest early in the cycle, behind the scenes, about landing 3 5-star kids. Justice Terry, Isaiah Gibson, and Julian Lewis. All 3 kids from Georgia. Behind the scenes, anybody who you'd listen to would tell you, none of those kids are going to end up at USC. Georgia's going to get the ones they want, for the most part, and Julian Lewis is going to be a battle because they're lowballing him. So they did. They lost Justice Terry. They lost Isaiah Gibson. The rumor, and I cannot confirm this, the rumor with Justice Terry is he was offered an amount of money, and that was tied to an NIL deal in which he needed to make appearances at a car dealership. My understanding is that the number of appearances he was required to make would all but make him a part-time employee at that car dealership.
Jeez, yeah, so that's not the way this game works anymore.
Reportedly, multiple schools found out about it, and we're like, that's all you're getting, and you have to do how many appearances? We'll match that through our collective.
No appearances, or one appearance.
You'll do 3 appearances. And he flipped. So, there's some issues there about just, again, being run like a professional operation. Again, you may hear about Oregon athletes doing appearances. You do not hear through the grapevine an athlete feel like they were lowballed, an athlete going, why am I doing at least an appearance a week at the car dealership for a year? Why do I have to do 50-plus appearances at a car dealership in 1 year? That's insane. You don't hear stories like that. And I'm not sharing stories unless I've heard them from 2 different places. Now, they may be exaggerated, but that is what I've heard. And I feel strongly that these are at least very close to true. This I can absolutely confirm. I wrote a Stockwatch article before signing day. And I mentioned USC as a potential loser going into signing day. They had not yet lost Julian Lewis. I'd also heard they were losing Hilton Stubbs. I wrote that in the article and said this stuff tends to have gravitational pull, that this stuff tends to lead to more decommitments. I got a call from someone from USC within, honest to God, within 2 minutes of it being on Twitter, saying, like, what the hell? And it's like, well, you guys are losing Julian Lewis and Hilton Stubbs. And they're like, yeah, but we think we're going to get two other guys.
We think.
Well, no, they were right.
Right, but...
just wait. Yeah, I get you.
From their argument's perspective,
and you
it hasn't
said,
happened yet.
And you said, you think we're going to lose other guys. Name them. And I said, I can't right now. I know there are guys who are interested in taking other visits, but if you lose your five-star quarterback and you lose your number one defensive recruit, you are likely to lose other players. And I was told, so you made that up. And I said, I didn't list players. I just said, I think you're going to lose more guys. They lost five commitments in like a 72-hour span after that story, including multiple high-level kids. Okay? So, no, turns out I didn't make it up. There was a lot of chest beating from USC about how they finished the 2025 cycle. And the reason is they landed a couple of big-time recruits, Jakeem Stewart and Hussein Longstreet. I was asked by a third-party person, because Jakeem Stewart had Oregon among his list of finalists. I was not the only journalist that was asked this. I checked. Do you think Oregon can match X amount of dollars? And it was my understanding it was someone who knew Jakeem Stewart's deal. The ins and outs of Jakeem Stewart's deal. Do you think Oregon will match X amount of dollars? I'm here to tell you, it was more than triple. This kid's a defensive tackle. It was more than triple the Julian Lewis deal, which I said was 1.2. And Jakeem Stewart has played roughly 15 varsity games in his entire life. In other words, if you pay three times what you were willing to pay your quarterback 6 months ago for a defensive tackle, you overpaid. I thought the number was wrong. Like, there's no way. This is someone representing or pretending to represent Stewart so that this offer will get sent to Oregon and they panic and offer it. It came out again from somewhere else. Hey, I'm hearing this is the deal for Jakeem Stewart. It was, again, triple what they were initially willing to pay a quarterback for a defensive tackle. Then they landed Hussein Longstreet. And a lot of people beat their chest over the fact that the LA Times reporter said, there is no chance in the world in like December, or excuse me, in the summer. There is no chance in the world USC is getting Hussein Longstreet. Hussein Longstreet is not going to USC. Now, I've never talked to that reporter, but I do have a decent understanding of potentially why that went on. My understanding is Longstreet, who was originally committed to big bank, big money, Texas A&M, was that he asked for potentially a lot more money than USC was going to pay Julian Lewis. So they lost Julian Lewis. They lost Hilton Stubbs. They ended up losing in that stretch, Jerome Miles, their five-star wide receiver, and their class tumbled. And then late, multiple people said it's triple the Julian Lewis money for their defensive tackle, and they landed Longstreet, who initially committed to Texas A&M, a school, I said in the first segment, I mentioned it a little bit in the second segment, is known for wildly overpaying for elite talent. So if you're a program that's beating your chest after you go 7-6 for fixing your defensive problems, if you're a program that's upset when you're on the hot or not list, right before you're about to lose five commitments and you scold a reporter because he, air quotes, made up that you're losing guys, and then you proceed to lose guys.
Made up with his opinion that he came up with on his own.
Yeah, I didn't even say they're destined to lose more guys. I said when you lose these two, oftentimes your class starts to crater. So they could very easily lose multiple. Well, they did, because I've done this for a long time. I know how it works. Then multiple folks expressed that on the West Coast, the two most overpaid recruits in the cycle were kids you got. What's your plan? So if you're selling kids early in the cycle, it's a luxury to play, go to school at USC and play for Lincoln Riley. And by the end of the cycle, you're overpaying and then beating your chest that you closed really well after losing five recruits right before you decided to overpay. What's your messaging? Where are you figuring things out? And by the way, these aren't the first, second, or third stories I've heard about USC and their issues. It's not hard to hear and find out what's going on with stuff with USC. They have issues going on. They have major issues going on. And part of it is their boosters aren't on the same page. If I give you this money, I want something for it.
Doesn't work like that.
I'll say this, too, for both Oregon and Oregon State. Both those schools, everybody does, has NIL deals in place for their athletes. Do you ever, I know everybody says Uncle Phil for Oregon, Uncle Phil. Do you ever hear any story leak ever of, well, Phil wants this athlete to be at Nike headquarters for
his
this.
His name isn't attached to anything personnel related ever. Not about the new head coach,
and again,
nothing.
I'm telling you, I'm fairly confident I know he's not the number one money man for Oregon, and you don't hear who the number one, two, three, four, five money men are for Oregon. The boosters that can donate money to a collective. And you don't hear about it for Oregon State either. But there are folks who know exactly who the car dealership guy was who really wanted the dude to make weekly appearances at his car dealership. That's an issue. You either need that guy's money and you put up with his crap, or you say, dude, those appearances are crippling. We're not doing
that.
It makes us look
stupid.
Yeah, this
money comes with no strings or doesn't come at all. Yeah.
And USC should have the resources to do it. And if you say, okay, well, they're willing to take on all comers, and some of that is the car dealership guy who wants a whole bunch of appearances, then you also shouldn't be 7-6. And if it's an honor to play in your program and you lowball athletes, you better not go 4-5 in your first year in the Big Ten. The messaging doesn't work. You can't start a cycle saying, it's an honor to play for us, and finishing the cycle going, we'll pay triple our quarterback's numbers for a defensive tackle. You have to get your branding and your messaging and your money in line. And it's now, what, year three of this, where we keep doing these shows and I keep going, man, USC is a sleeping giant. USC is a sleeping giant. And then I see Lincoln Riley talking about, we have receipts for people who criticized our defense. Dude, you still don't get it.
You know who keeps receipts? Losers. Okay, I get it if you're like, you know, the world-class athlete that has a chip on his shoulder and needs something to motivate you. Like,
say it when you've won a gold medal.
Yes.
Say it when you're holding a trophy.
Don't threaten people with receipts. Well, you're down bad, dude.
It makes no sense. They finished below Minnesota, Iowa, and Illinois in the Big Ten. What are they doing? It drives me nuts, and I keep comparing it to Alabama. Alabama also has players that get NIL money. You don't hear issues about, oh crap, Kalen DeBoer had to wildly overpay to keep his class together after a 9-4 season. You don't see Kalen DeBoer doing interviews with On3 talking about how they figured it out and made the transition from Saban to him without incident. Because his tail's tucked between his legs. He went 9-4. We got to fix it. We got to make the college football playoff or else. You don't hear those issues. You hear those issues when there are leaks. You hear those issues when people don't have stuff tied down. And I'm telling you right now, USC doesn't have it tied down. And unless Lincoln Riley starts to figure it out, he's going to be the dude whose ego gets in the way of him being a great mind. Because he is. He is a great mind. But if you're the dude that's saying, I kept receipts after a 7-6 year, and you're the dude who's scrambling to overpay for recruits, when you are in Los Angeles, you're doing something wrong. USC needs to get it figured out. You know who else needs to get figured out? Team USA, tied with Canada. 2-2 with 5 minutes left. You have a bet, don't you, on overtime?
I got a couple of them. I'm also on the game under 5.5 goals. So
you need a 3-2 overtime USA win.
That would be perfect.
Now, could you win if it's 3-2 overtime Canada win?
Yeah, because I didn't bet either side.
You didn't bet either side.
I did not bet either side.
By the way, you are rocking a USA hat.
That's right.
Is that a Dream Team basketball hat?
Yeah.
It looks 92 USA hat.
Yeah, the block print, I think, is what they used both in like 92 and 96, I think. But yeah, it's got like the Zubaz print on the bill. I got it in like a clearance bin like 12 years ago somewhere for like $5. All-time great buy.
Well, I'm here. I'm here. There's an article in the Sacramento Bee about Ryder Lyons out of Folsom. He's the number 2 quarterback in the country. And it's, I think
great
it's a cool
name, it's by the way.
Dude, he is the truth. He's legit. You will find folks who think of the last 5 years, he's the best quarterback to come out.
Oh.
But, you know, you'll get a little Bryce Underwood in there. You get some Arch Manning. You get some Dante Moore. I polled some folks in the last week, and the question was, if you had to pick, and he has to be in college now, if you had to pick a quarterback to be like the generational guy, who would it be? You could pick, you know, Nico Imoliave, Arch Manning, Dante Moore, Bryce Underwood, Tavian St. Clair, a couple other guys that just signed with Michigan and Ohio State, respectively. Ryder Lyons, you know, in Folsom, the number 2 quarterback in the class for next year. And the general consensus was basically like, I'm not sure there is one. I think people think Nico has the best arm, but he's really raw. I heard that from a number of places. A lot of folks, my comp, by the way, on Arch Manning is Brock Purdy plus. There is not, that dude does not have truly elite skills anywhere. Like, he's not an elite arm talent. He's not elite size. He's not 6'5", 230. You know, he's not, but he is good. And if his name were Jones, he were Arch Jones, he'd still be likely Texas's starting quarterback next year that people were excited about. But the idea that he's a guaranteed number one pick's a little silly. Anyway, I just thought that was a fun conversation to have. There are some people that are high on Jonas Williams, the Oregon quarterback commit. But the Oregon quarterback commit, not much longer.
Yeah, I've heard. I saw that reported.
Took a visit a few weeks ago to USC. I heard from a USC insider that, by all accounts, as of several weeks ago, USC was expecting him to flip. That's now the prediction, according to multiple national folks on three. That matches what I've heard since his visit a few weeks ago. The USC folks have thought he was a lock to flip for almost a month now. Expect that to come. Oregon pursuing some other folks. So a little bit of a ding to Oregon's class, but still. This last recruiting cycle, they finished with the highest blue chip percentage in the country, and they have the number one class in 2026. One quick thing before we go. I find this really annoying. People keep saying, well, you keep talking about how recruiting rankings really matter and what's it got in Oregon. They finished this season undefeated, number one in the country, had the most draft picks in program history last year, are about to break that record this year with 12 players invited to the combine, and everyone predicts them as a near lock to make the college football playoff again next year. Where did all this recruiting come from, and how did it pan out? Oregon's a perennial college football contender and is
on the rise still.
And is breaking records every year for most drafted prospects. It's now, folks. Sorry, I mean, it takes 3 years because your program has to saturate. I've been talking about it for a few years. The time has arrived. It is now. Thank you for listening to Recruiting with Andrew Nimick on 1080 The Fan. Thank you, Buck, for producer work. As always, fans appreciate you.
This has been Recruiting with Andrew Nimick, the show for recruiting fans. Check out Andrew's work at scorebooklive.com and join us each week for Recruiting with Andrew Nimick on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.